The Americans with Disabilities Act turns 29 today, and it's affected the way our workplaces, communities, and culture look today. But there have been challenges over time. Courts today are considering questions about website compliance, service and therapy animal accommodations, and how people with mental illness are treated in our criminal justice system. Laura Rothstein is a professor of law and distinguished university scholar at the University of Louisville in the Louis D. Brandeis School of Law. Laura, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for recognizing this anniversary.
What kind of milestone was this law when it was passed?
Oh, it was huge. Before I had have actually been writing and working in this area for almost 40 years, and before the ADA, we did have the Rehabilitation Act, but it only applied to programs that received federal financial assistance. So it applied to most universities and a lot of healthcare systems, but the private sector, most employers, movie theaters, restaurants, hotels, kind of all of that, was not subject to any mandate not to discriminate on the basis of disability, nor were they required to provide reasonable accommodations. So the ADA was a significant change, and it took a lot of work for it to pass. I recently published an article about whether the ADA would pass today, which is unlikely for lots of reasons, but it is widely applauded, and President Bush said this was his proudest achievement during his tenure as president. So it was significant because it now meant that most private employers were covered and could not discriminate on the basis of disability. It meant that employees who wanted to go out to lunch with their friends who had disabilities, mobility impairments would be probably the most apparent one, could expect that the restaurants would need to be accessible, and so on and so on, and movie theaters. And so it was a major change. And of course, it took a while for everyone to sort of recognize, and some were better than others, but yes, it was big.
We hear sometimes people talk in terms of pre-Americans with Disabilities Act and post-ADA generations. How did this change our culture and the lives of people with disabilities?
Well, it changed our culture because once you were prohibited from discriminating, and the employment sector was probably the biggest, but it was also, think about the kinds of places we go every day. We go to movie theaters, we go to restaurants, we go to hotels, we go to entertainment centers, we go to museums. And now those were required to be accessible and provide accommodations, such as it may be captioning of a video or something of that sort. And so it meant that people with disabilities could now function in the world and find it a more welcoming place. And I don't want to pretend that it turned it around overnight, but it did make a big impact. And I think we can start seeing the impact it had on our culture in some of the television programs and the movies. A woman with a mobility impairment just received a Tony this past year. So the presence and participation has increased dramatically, and the awareness is significant. I think if you think about the fact that one in five Americans has a disability, but probably every American has either a family member or a friend or someone that they know with a disability, it's has a huge impact. So it has made a big difference.
I've seen some people make the case that actually this ended up helping people without disabilities as well. My personal example is, accessibility to buildings. All of a sudden, when I had a double twin stroller, I was benefiting from a lot of these changes myself.
That is the perfect example. And in fact, I often use it sort of jokingly and saying, you know, roller luggage wasn't rocket science. Why did it not get invented sooner? And if you start thinking about roller luggage became more common when you started having curb cuts everywhere. So it is absolutely a benefit. So it's those shopping carts. It is strollers. It is people bringing food into places for catering and luggage, of course. So it has helped people without disabilities. The other thing, and this is more going to the special education law, but there are ADA implications there as well. The presence of young people in our schools with disabilities has really made everyone more aware and more understanding and empathetic about a whole range of disabilities.
Talking to law professor Laura Rothstein from the University of Louisville on the anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Well, there are a lot of legal frontiers to this day on the ADA, Laura, and one big one has to do with something that wasn't really there when it was passed, the internet and internet accommodations for people who access the internet maybe in different ways. What's going on?
Well, the internet, it's interesting because, of course, in 1990, we did have technology, but not like we have it today. And the technology is both a friend of people with disabilities and not a friend of people with disabilities. For people with mobility impairments, it means you can do all kinds of things, order products and so on from your home without necessarily having to go out to the store. But for a person who has a visual impairment, navigating a website, and if it is not an accessible website, is really daunting and a barrier. And so there started to be recognition that this was a barrier. And unfortunately, we don't yet have design standards. We know there are some guidelines and so on, but we don't have a federal mandate that if you are a provider of a website, you must make it accessible in these ways. There is, in fact, some litigation that says, well, websites aren't even subject to the ADA. I think that's most courts are saying that they are subject to the ADA. But the harder question then is, well, what does that mean that you have to do? So, for example, and this affects universities, it affects retailers, it affects museums, it affects pretty much anyone who has a website. And, do you have to, if you have a video on your website, do you have to provide closed captioning for everything? Do you have to do everything that's archived, make that accessible? If you have something that is linked to something else, are you a bulletin board or do you have to make sure that's accessible and so on? So those are the kinds of things that it's not just whether they're subject to the ADA, but what you have to do. And another challenge would be the small business owner. You want to, you know, open up your own business, and suddenly you're faced with somebody who is saying, well, you don't have an accessible website. And so I think it is an issue that would be tremendously helped if the federal government and the Department of Justice had started working on regulations on this. And I think there has been a strong cry for them to complete that. So at least it's like, okay, we know that we have to do this, but what does that mean? Kind of a parallel example would be several years ago, there was a Supreme Court decision that said cruise ships were subject to the ADA. But that didn't decide what that meant they had to do in terms of accessibility because they had safety issues and they were unique vehicles. So that one is huge. There have been a very large number of lawsuits and complaints about websites, and so we're really kind of watching that. But I would say that's probably, in some ways, one of the hottest issues under the ADA right now.
A concern I've seen raised lately is that, okay, the ADA officially was intended to end employment discrimination, but people with disabilities tend to be unemployed at substantially higher rates than the rest of the population. Are there wrinkles? Are there problems here that are preventing the full implementation of employment laws?
Well, it varies a lot depending on who the employer is. And I think in some areas, and there is a National Resource Job Accommodation Network that is available to help employers know what to do in terms of accommodations. So that's really where if an employer might be worried about the accommodation. And then there's also the aspect of health insurance. And so that is a hidden challenge because there may be a fear that someone with a disability is going to cost more in health insurance, so employers that provide that. So that's one of the other issues. The ADA has certainly improved the employment, but you are correct that it is still disparately, and especially people with severe disabilities are even more adversely affected. And so it's gotten better, but we do have improvements to be made.
Anecdotally, I've heard concerns that some people suspect that when you see a job application and it says you have to be able to lift X number of pounds, 50 pounds, say, or more for the job, people argue in some cases that's not essential to the job. It's an easy way to discriminate against a person with disabilities.
That can be raised. The employer has the burden of establishing that some, I mean, they put it out there, but if someone were to challenge that that's not really an essential function, then the employer would come back and say, well, yes, it is, and there's a whole set of factors in the regulations about how you determine. For example, a firefighter, even though they may not have to carry someone down a ladder very often, it's going to be real important that they be able to do that when it's needed. So that is, you know, how often do you have to do it? Are there other people available to do it, and so on? So that is possible in some job applications, but the burden is on the employer to demonstrate that it's an essential function, and then the employee has to demonstrate that they're able to carry it out. But it, they may be able to carry it out if they have reasonable accommodations.
Talking to Laura Rothstein, professor of law at the University of Louisville. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about the anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Has your life been affected by the ADA? Did it change your life? If so, how? If you are wondering what kind of accommodations you need to have, say, if you're an employer or have a store, you can call in as well. Are there further changes you'd like to see made? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Laura Rothstein of the University of Louisville, looking at the anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. We talked to Democratic State Representative Jimmy Anderson from Wisconsin's 47th District this week about some legislation being introduced at the Capitol. During that conversation, he shared his thoughts about the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah, I mean, it's pivotal. It's all about making sure that people get the proper accommodations that they request, and all they're asking for is simple dignity. I mean, they just want to be included in the process, and the ADA has been pivotal to making sure that people in the workplace have been able to get that dignity.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. How did the Americans with Disabilities Act change your workplace, your school, your community? Did it give you access, or a family member, access to those things? Do you see room for change now in this era? Call in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Gina Maria is with us in Appleton.
Hello.
Hi, Gina Maria. What did you want to bring up?
Well, we have this wonderful body of legislation, but it doesn't help if hotels don't follow it. So on occasion, I travel by myself. I live by myself, and I'm a wheelchair user and have limited accommodations, but, you know, things work. And then when I travel, on numerous occasions, you get there and look at the shower and fine, there's a bench to sit down, but the water is so far away that you can't manage the controls. So there's no enforcement body, and that's my concern.
Gina Maria, thanks for the call. If someone encounters that, say in this case at a hotel, Laura, what recourse, if any, do they have?
Well, the hotels are very important because they conventions meet there and so on. So I think large providers of conventions have an opportunity to leverage and to make sure that, that the hotels do what they say they're going to do, because some of them hold themselves, yes, we have accessible hotel rooms, and then they're not truly accessible. There are specific design standards about what that means. So we want to be careful, because sometimes things aren't ideal, but they may still be in compliance. That's where you want to work to try to raise awareness about something that may be technically designed correctly just by common sense. It isn't going to work for someone. But if they're not even in compliance, you can bring a complaint, or, you know, you can kind of let it be known in the internet world about, but there are concerns about if you're not correct and are you being defamatory and so on. But it is, I think some hotels are very good and some are not as good, and the marketplace will have some impact, but I think there is more that needs to be done with hotels. So you can bring a private case, and there are many state laws and local laws that also provide for this. But under the ADA, under Title III, an individual cannot get damages. They can only get attorney's fees and they can get an injunction. So that's a bit of a barrier to complaining about that. But I think, you know, complaining to the management, especially of the large chains, they're more likely to hear that if there are lots of complaints. So I would encourage that person to keep letting it be known and not just necessarily think about litigation, but complaining to or bringing that to the attention of the local manager. But sometimes if it's designed at a national level, they need to work on changing that. And, you know, talk about the places that are accessible and encourage people to go there instead of the places that aren't.
Gina Maria, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Anna with us in northern Minnesota. Anna, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Anna?
Yeah, so I actually just happened upon your radio program. I'm on a road trip. I have not really even heard of the ADA before, so I'm, like, completely new to the situation. But I thought I would love to call in and get some more information. My partner was actually recently disabled about a year and a half ago in a pretty serious motorcycle accident. He's lost the use of his left arm through some serious nerve damage. So he is navigating the world as a newly disabled person, and I'm his partner, so I'm trying to help him through it. And, you know, it's affected our lives pretty greatly. He recently went back to work in a retail position. I'm not going to name the employer right now, but I, first of all, I'm just curious what types of resources there are available to somebody in his situation who's kind of like new to this whole world. And also, I'm curious too, what types of things could be done. I guess he's kind of expressed to me that his new employer hasn't been totally understanding of his disability. I mean, he's wearing a sling. It's pretty obvious his arm doesn't work, but they're still having him lift stuff and not letting him sit down or take breaks. So he's actually talked to me a little bit about maybe leaving the job pretty soon because it's too hard physically. I'm just curious. I'm calling in to find out what kinds of things we could do for him or what I can learn to tell him.
Anna, thanks. Good luck to you and your partner. Laura, thoughts for somebody newly in this position, not sure what the laws or resources are?
Sure. And I think that's what's significant about the ADA, because any person right now could become a member of the group that's protected by this law because of an accident or an illness and so on. And we do tend to become more aware when we have a friend or a family member or someone we know. And the resource that's available in the employment setting is it's a national resource, and it actually has been in place since, I think, 1985. It's the Job Accommodation Network. I don't have the link to it, but I can give this to you afterwards if there are people that want to try to connect to that. And it provides employers and I think now also individuals about, let's say, I have a job working on a loading dock and I have limited, what kind of accommodations could there be? I work in retail, and what kind of accommodations could I request? Now, one of the challenges is, and there are a number of cases on this, is an employer isn't required to provide an accommodation if the person hasn't made known the need for that. But there is an argument that if someone has an apparent condition, the ADA does not cover temporary conditions, and there's a whole definition about what it means to be a temporary condition. It sounds like this caller, it's more than a temporary condition. So it may be that the individual needs to request that I have this limited mobility and I need X accommodation. The employee has to be able to carry out the essential functions of the job, but that takes into account reasonable accommodations. So, for example, if you would have, let's say, an employment setting where someone worked at a cash register, and they ordinarily do not allow water or food at the cash register for reasons of it doesn't look good and so on. But somebody is taking medication for a disability, and it requires them to have water frequently. That may be that the employer should allow an exemption. And so that would be some, but if that isn't made known to the employer, that wouldn't be required. So it's real, the courts have been very specific about saying there should be an interactive process once there is an awareness. So there are resources, and in every situation is so dependent on what kind of job, what kind of impairment there is, and so on.
Thanks again for that call. Our producer gives me a number for that job accommodation network, 800-526-7234. Their website is askjan.org, askjan as in job accommodation network. Just our last minute or so, Laura, what is, do you expect to see Congress revisit this? Are we going to be getting more clarification from courts? What are the next steps here?
I don't really expect Congress to revisit this. And the article I wrote talks a little bit about this. And I wrote an article about that there was a recent attempt to require that individuals had to make known this would be in the architectural barriers area. Right now, I think the political climate is such that Congress is unlikely to do. They're not doing a whole lot about much of anything because of, you know, we've got kind of challenging political times. But I think there's a concern that if you open up any major legislation like that to change, then it's going to open up a can of worms. So I don't really expect it to be amended. What I think would be very helpful is if there were new regulations on the websites. The Department of Transportation is now working on new regulations related to the animals on airplanes. One of the big issues that is we see in the news a lot are animals, especially on airplanes, but in other settings. And there are some regulations on those, but the airline setting is unique, and the Department of Transportation has recognized that. So I think we'll see some action in the regulatory world, but I think we'll continue to see lots and lots of court cases.
Laura, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye. Laura Rothstein, law professor at the University of Louisville. Coming up Monday on Central Time, the U.S. Justice Department says it's bringing back the death penalty for certain federal inmates. We'll look at the reasons behind that decision and the arguments for and against it. That and look at legal challenges to a pipeline in Wisconsin and Michigan and more coming up Monday on Central Time.